B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk soft and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday.
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Our cap situation in this particular year, this is kind of the year that we've taken to, adjust our cap from the spending and that we've had, in accumulation of prior years, that we just haven't been able to have the kind of depth on our roster that we've had in some other years, and that's provided more opportunity for younger players. So it's a combination of all the reasons.
So there you go, everybody. It's hour number 3 of Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Bill Belichick yesterday on Sirius XM NFL Radio on a show hosted by Charlie Weiss. He is saying that the depth issues this year are partly because of the cap. And this is the latest excuse for Bill Belichick as to why the Patriots are the way that they are in 2020. Don't look at me. It's a cap issue, Chris. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's mind-numbing to me. It's the same guy who obviously said, as we all know, cap space can be maneuvered in a variety of ways. Now he's saying the salary cap is this major deterrent to them doing what they want to do. And then the other part, to me, is just false in terms of he's talking about all these, that's why we're playing these young. What young players is he talking about that are hurting the team? I mean, Owenu is playing, but he's been great.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it in terms of young players? What are you talking about? Who are these? It's not Damier Byrd. Is it? Are you complaining about having to play the receiver you drafted in the first round, N'Keal Harry?
I mentioned Chase Winovich. He's seemingly in the coach's doghouse here the last few weeks.
He's their best pass rusher.
Right.
I mean, you can make an argument about the tight end. So basically you're telling me the season fell apart. I didn't know this. I realize it now in hindsight. It's so obvious. When I think about the Patriots dynasty, when I think about the Jeff Benedict book, which I'm still making my way through, I'm not at this chapter yet, but obviously he's going to have the book come out, and there'll have to be an addendum to the book, a whole chapter on Matt Lacoste, who was the key to the whole dynasty, that one Jenga piece that you pull out and it all collapses. Because really what Bill's saying is that when Matt Lacoste, the tight end, you guys know who Matt Lacoste, oh, you don't? That's right. You don't know who he is because he's a nameless, faceless tight end who's not very good. When he opted out at tight end, that was it. That was curtains for the season, because now you had to play Devin Asiasi and Dalton Keene, the two tight ends you drafted.
My hand was forced.
That's what Bill is saying. You had to play that tight end you moved up for, Devin Asiasi. You had to, play Dalton Keene, and that was really the key at that point. It was over at that point.
It's just also disingenuous.
Oh,
Bill, the roster is the way it is because of the moves you've made over the last 4 or 5 years, and now it's catching up to you. Period. End of story. Your thoughts on this at 617-779-0985. And anything that we have discussed so far, like Brady in Tampa bringing in AB, Jordan in Florida. You've been hanging a bit. Appreciate that. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello.
I want to get your guys' thoughts on Brady's chemistry with Mike Evans in recent weeks. I think one way to look at it is Brady was still offensive player of the month without really getting Evans involved. And maybe they're just going to use him as a decoy since Tampa has so many weapons. But I also wish we had more Brady to Mike Evans touchdowns and highlights. What are you guys thought?
Well, in the beginning of the year, like in the red zone, he was going to him. And now, Jenna Lane, who covers them for the Four Letter Network, was saying Evans has been playing on one leg. So maybe that's one of the reasons.
A hamstring issue, right?
Something like that. I mean, the chemistry there, I don't think it's been as bad as people have portrayed it. At least not in the red zone from what I've seen. I haven't seen every Buccaneers game. But Tom will sort of spread it around. But I just feel like, not only is it one more mouth to feed, it is a Tony Robbins size mouth that they now have to feed. And Antonio Brown, like this guy, his entire career has been about get me the ball, get me my numbers. So now all of a sudden he's going to come into Tampa and he's been completely reformed and he's just going to be like, yeah, I'm happy to be the number 3 or the number 4 wide receiver. It doesn't make sense.
Tony Robbins hungry. Eat Mike Evans. From Texas A&M. The A stands for anise. I taste anise and M is marinara. I mean, the man's mouth is the size of a hubcap. Really, go look at him if you've never seen him. Anthony in Clinton has a thought on Josh McDaniels. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, hey, guys. Thank you for taking my call. Great show. I know you guys touched on Belichick without Brady record earlier, no one really references any blame on McDaniels. I mean, he's 15-35 without Brady. I mean, I think we can all agree we should have won against Denver, right? I mean, why are we doing trick plays in the third quarter against them? Did he run out of plays, or what's going on? For me, for years, the pedestrian play calling seems like he's only ready for one half and can't recover. And usually Brady saves him with audibles at the line and, you know, obviously other players like Edelman making great plays. Is the deflection of what you guys are talking about with Belichick trying not to really throw McDaniels under the bus? And what's the chances Brady left because of McDaniels half-game pedestrian play calling? Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you.
Well, that relationship got a little frosty towards the end, right?
Yeah, it did. I mean, it did. It definitely did. And I know that Tom denied that. And he's always had a good personal relationship with Josh, but things were not what they had been in the past. You know, before they were sort of portrayed as being like brothers. And I would say my understanding of it is that was not the case the last couple of years. And you can look at the incident a few years back in Buffalo when he misses Brandon Cooks. You know, I think that was one time where stuff that had been family business and kept behind closed doors sort of erupted out in public.
Yeah,
and there was a fine attached to that.
Yeah, I know, and that wasn't really reported at the time, and
nope,
I understand.
No, but there was a fine.
He's probably skating a bit, though, when it comes to the old blame pie for how this team's played over the last few weeks. For a guy that's lusted after the mobile quarterback, look, he drafted Tim Tebow. He had worked out Lamar Jackson. You have a guy that has that type of ability in Cam Newton. These last few weeks, it does feel like they're not maybe playing to his abilities. Like,
yes,
they didn't run him the way that they did against Miami, right?
No, I agree with you on that. I mean, I look at the game plan that Josh came up with for Jacoby Brissett. I look at what he did in 2008 with Matt Castle. And I know I said Castle turned out to be, you know, better than I think we all thought. But in the beginning, they really were nursing him. And Bill and Josh deserve some credit for that. I just look at Josh and I have a hard time putting a lot of blame on him because I saw what he did with Kyle Orton in Denver, at least in the first six games. I mean, I know he failed in St. Louis and you can put that mark on him. I think he's pretty good, but I think your point about adjusting the, I don't think the Patriots have done a good enough job with Cam Newton of adjusting the offense to his strengths. And instead, I think they're just trying to say, this is our offense. This is what we're going to do. Cam, adjust to us. I think they need to meet him more in the middle and do stuff he's comfortable doing.
Jimmy in Natick with another thought on Josh McDaniels next here on Gasper Murray. Hello, Jimmy.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. What's up?
Good.
Look, I was thinking of something. You know the stuff Braves began blamed for with the wide receivers development here?
Yeah.
And I think it's more to do with Josh McDaniels. Think about this. Who was the offensive coordinator under Branch and Givens when we drafted them? Charlie Weiss.
Yep.
Who was the offensive coordinator with Gronk Hernandez in the development of Edelman? O'Brien. I don't see anybody ever getting developed under Josh McDaniels as a skill position, and I think that's going way overlooked here in the aspects of the offense and everything.
Well, the only thing I'll say is, like, when he was in Denver, he drafted Demaryius Thomas and Eric Decker.
Correct.
So it seems like he can recognize a receiver. Now, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head how long he was coached there. I don't think it was very long.
I think it was only 2 years.
But I'm saying how long he had those guys. Oh. You think it was 2 years? I don't think it was. It might have been like a season or half a season or something. That's an interesting point. I don't know. I mean, I think to just swing it back around to the receiver thing, Brady took a lot of blame last year for not being able to get Gunnar Olszewski into the mix and Jacoby Myers into the mix. It looks like if you have a guy that can actually play in Tyler Johnson, he has no problem throwing him the football. But his problem, he has problems throwing the ball to Chad Jackson, Brandon Tate, Taylor Price, Josh Boyce, Aaron Dobson, Jacoby Myers, Gunnar Olszewski. I mean, I don't know. Is that really surprising? I don't think it was really about Tom. It was probably about the talent or lack thereof of those guys.
Alex in the car with a thought on Tom Brady. Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, guys. Great show as always. I'm not surprised that Tom wants AB on the bus because, you know, he loves surrounding himself with
Alex, hold it.
People,
Alex.
Tony Robbins.
Hold it like a pizza. It sounds like you're in a car wash.
Oh, my mistake.
Oh, you're becoming like Felger. I could hear every word he said.
I couldn't.
You interrupted his take, which was good for this.
My mistake. Can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead.
I could hear you before.
Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
I'm not surprised that he wants him on the Bucks because he loves surrounding himself with horrible people. Tony Robbins, Alex Guerrero. Not surprised in the least. And on another note, I can't wait for Mike Evans and Antonio Brown to start throwing hands on the sideline. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Alex. Yeah, that's the because Mike Evans is a hothead, and yeah. I am no fan of him. I think that's, you know, when Felger talks about the wide receivers he doesn't like in the NFL, I don't go that far. But there is part of it I understand, like from a fantasy football aspect, like people pump guys up because they put up ridiculous stats, especially in garbage time. Mike Evans, now that I'm really paying attention to the Bucs and watching these games week in, week out, he's that guy. I think he's such a fundamentally flawed football player, Chris. Yeah. He's just like good in the red zone. He can get tall for you, make a big catch.
Yep.
He's just not that great of a route runner. Always like good for an OPI with a dumb push off. Like he's just not that smart of a football player and a hothead. And now you bring in AB. His catchers are going to go down. They have the last couple of weeks. It just feels like that's a volatile mix.
No, I think you're right on. I think it is a volatile mix. In terms of Mike Evans, I'm not as down on him as you are, but I would say that I think that his compete level can fluctuate based on how much he's getting the football. And he is one of those guys that will kind of check out if he's not getting the ball. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely something there. And Antonio Brown, again, I'll just say what I said before. I think the biggest challenge for Tom Brady down there is changing the locker room culture. And you have guys that have seemed pretty content to go 6-10, 7-9, 8-8 and get their numbers. Well, now it's like, okay, you could win 11 or 12 games, but you're not going to get your numbers. How are you going to respond to that? Though a lot of those guys down there have defined their NFL careers or success in the NFL through individual accomplishment, not team accomplishment. And now you're bringing in the poster child for that, Antonio Brown, and you're going to ask everybody else to adhere to this new culture? I don't know, man. I just don't think... I hope I'm wrong. I want to be wrong. I'm not rooting against Antonio Brown. I'm certainly not rooting against Tom Brady. But as much as I've talked about the hubris of the hoodie over the years, this is the hubris of Brady, I think, to think that he can inject this guy into the mix in the middle of the season, you know, when he's, what's their record at this? What are they, 5-3? Or 5-2, whatever
five
they
and
are.
Two, yeah, yeah,
7 games into his tenure there, he thinks he's reformed the culture enough to inject this guy into the mix?
Seems fast.
Yeah, it does seem fast. And you don't have Devin McCourty and Matthew Slater and the other leaders you had in New England to help you wrangle AB. It's gonna be tough.
The football analytics folks, your PFFs, Aaron Schatz, Football Outsiders, they're really pants off for this defense. Are they as legit, do you think, as you know, those groups are making them out to be?
I mean, they are pretty good. You know, they're better, I think, than maybe I gave them credit for. The linebackers are very good.
I love Devin White.
Yeah, David's really good. I still think the secondary is suspect, but they've gotten better corner play than I expected. Guys like Jamel Dean. When you look at them, they are good. I mean, they put pressure on guys. They made Aaron Rodgers look pretty pedestrian. I can see they turn the football over. They're number one in the league against the run. I can see why people are really very bullish on them at this point.
Yeah, and they have Ndamukong Suh, who's played well pretty much everywhere he's been. Yes, he quit when he was down in Miami, but when he's on, man, he's fun to watch. And I know he's got a bad rap because he's a bit of a hothead. But
yeah, he's a dirty player.
Yeah, but man, sometimes you need that dirt.
You
can't teach mean, Chris, and that guy plays mean. He was really good for the Rams on that Super Bowl run year a few years ago, I know the Patriots neutralized him in the Super Bowl, thank God, but so far he looks like a force down there, and I just enjoy watching that guy throw grown men like pillows. And you know, there was a fun stat about him that I found interesting. Outside of suspensions, which there's been many, he's never missed a game due
that's
to
interesting
injury. For a guy that plays that position the way that he does, you would figure there'd be an ankle, some sort of tear at some point, knock on wood now, I hope I'm not cursing him, but he's never missed a game outside of suspense.
Again, you know, I'll say, I think for Brady, the biggest challenge there is being able to have guys subjugate their egos, and I think he just maybe took, this is one part of the Brady-Belichick relationship from Brady's side, I think he's just sort of taken for granted that guys will, you know, subjugate their egos and be willing to do what's best for the team. That's not the way it is everywhere. And Bill built that culture, and now Brady has to try and duplicate it in Tampa. And I think it's going to be a challenge. And it starts really, he's going to have to teach it to everybody from the head coach on down.
More of your thoughts on this Bill Belichick commentary from yesterday's SiriusXM NFL Radio. We'll get to your thoughts on that at 617-779-0985 coming up in our next segment. And we should probably touch on this game for a minute, too, and how we feel like it's probably going to play out in Buffalo, which is going to have some serious weather tomorrow. We'll get to that all next here on Gasper and Murray.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the sport. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk soft and out of town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Cap situation in this particular year, this is kind of the year that we've taken to, I would say, adjust our cap from the spending and that we've had, you know, in accumulation of prior years that we just haven't been able to have the kind of depth on our roster that we've had in some other years, and that's provided more opportunity for younger players. So it's a combination of all the reasons.
So there you go, everybody. It's hour number three of Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Bill Belichick yesterday on Sirius XM NFL Radio on a show hosted by Charlie Weiss. He is saying that the depth issues this year are partly because of the cap. And this is the latest excuse for the...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Our cap situation in this particular year, this is kind of the year that we've taken to, I would say, adjust our cap from the spending and that we've had, you know, in accumulation of prior years that we just haven't been able to have the kind of depth on our roster that we've had in some other years, and that's provided more opportunity for younger players. So it's a combination of all the reasons.
Oh, 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 Bill is crying. Wah, wah. Bill Belichick on Sirius XM NFL Radio yesterday. His former OC, that would be Charlie Weiss, and we'll get to the question that was asked there, but he's making excuses again. Oh, no, the situation the Patriots are in 2020, the reason the roster's so bereft, it's not because of me, it's a cap situation, you see? It's a cap situation. A few weeks ago, I was whining about practice. We can't practice. Practice, what am I supposed to do? It's COVID, it's crazy, practice, I'm mad. I'm mad about practice. Now, weeks later, and he still mentioned a practice. He did again in this interview yesterday. Well, you know, maybe we'd be better if we could have some practice and I'm not playing a shell game with the offensive line. Wah, whoa, 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 Bill is crying. Now he's also blaming the cap situation as well. Don't look at me, even though he should just be looking in the mirror for the reason that this team is the way it is. Just look in the mirror, Bill. It's on you. You've made the roster decisions. No. Wiping my hands clean. It's a cap situation, you see. In fact, here is how this whole thing was set up, because you feel like this question was already planted.
Yes, Rick. I feel like this is a plant. I feel like this is public relations. I feel like Charlie Weiss was instructed on what topics Bill wanted to hit. This was a Bill Belichick town hall on the state of the Patriots.
Bill, I've really noticed, you know, watching the Pats, you're playing a whole bunch of young guys, you know, and I know that you've always been able to find these young guys that could play early in their career. Are most of them playing because you like them, or are some of them playing because you have to play them in the world we're living in?
You know, you're right, Charlie. We're playing more young players than we played in the past. We, you know, had that, you know, combination of reasons. We, you know, we're pretty heavily invested in our team in the past few years. And, you know, from a salary cap standpoint, we didn't have much flexibility at all. I think that was obvious on the Cam Newton contract. So, Then we had some opt-outs, so we lost some players there that would normally, you know, have been given a significant amount of play time. And then, like every year, you know, a couple guys are banged up, and, you know, we've missed some, you know, missed some guys here and there in certain games. So, but I think when you combine it all together, there's opportunity there, and some of that opportunity's gone to younger players. And again, because of our cap situation, and in this particular year, this is kind of the year that we've taken to, I would say, adjust our cap from the spending and that we've had, you know, in accumulation of prior years, that we just haven't been able to have the kind of depth on our roster that we've had in some other years, and that's provided more opportunity for younger players. So it's a combination of all the reasons.
But you feel like the meat's in the question.
In the question, it's like, oh, I noticed you're playing like more, you know. At first, it's such a sycophantic question. It's like, well, you've always been able to find these young guys that can contribute right away, but you're having to play more young guys than you normally do, I've noticed. And then he just goes into it and he mentions the salary cap like three times.
Oh, right,
there's opt outs in there. Yeah. I mean, it's like a cornucopia of excuses. I mean, I think that was teed up for. I mean, that's like, you know. That's like LeBron James throwing an alley-oop to Anthony Davis.
Mike and Woburn, what do you make of all this?
Jim, Chris, I think we need to have an intervention, because Jim is he wants to see the world burn. We all know this. but in 1 week's time, he's gone after Bill Belichick, J.R.R. Tolkien, and the McRib.
I draw the line at the McRib.
McRib's a terrible
sandwich.
That's
blasphemy. Oh, my God.
All it tastes like is that tangy barbecue sauce, and that's not a knock on McDonald's. I love 99.9% of their products, but the McRib is an abomination.
I would get up in the middle of this show to get a McRib if it were available. I would leave right now to get a McRib.
Chris, we would drive like the Blues Brothers to McDonald's.
Oh, 100%.
Police barriers.
Yes, I totally agree. McRib.
Because, Jim, you as a person who believes that the world as we know it is ending should embrace the McRib, because it gives us hope.
It does.
It gives us hope, because even after every delicious part of the pig has been picked clean, they manage to find little bits and pieces to blow off with a machine, press it to something that looks like a small piano keys, slather it with rib sauce, and make it delicious. It is the greatest human achievement in terms of artificially created garbage food. That, I mean, it's the pinnacle. It's the Oscar.
I have to be honest.
Processed food.
If you told me the McRib was made out of Soylent Green, I would still eat it.
Oh my God, absolutely. People wouldn't. It would change my opinion on people, because even bad people could taste good. You know.
Well, we're not going to agree on the McRib, but what did you want to say about Belichick? Because you think he should be absolved of all the issues that this team is
dealing with? No, I don't think he should be absolved, Jim. But just like the McRib, Bill Belichick puts together. He gets more out of less. Okay, there's only so many parts of the pig that you can blow off to make the McRib. If Bill is trying to do it right now with what's left of the pig, sugar-free barbecue sauce, some gherkins that someone's left in the fridge for 6 months, and like no onions, you know, and you try to make it into a lettuce wrap. You can't do it, and he's just telling you that he can't do it. Bill Belichick can't do all these things, and you know what? A lot of people have said it in this hour. You can't do the things that the professor, Josh McDaniels, wants to do with the kind of wideouts that he has. You know, I mean, honestly, I'm at a point where I'm ready to tell Duke and Duke to go in and sell, because I want to see Bill draft. I want to see him rebuild this team. I don't want to see him go to another team like Phil Jackson that already has stars and win, because we know he could do that. We know he could go somewhere else that's seeded with talent and coach them to win. I want to see him sell all the pieces that are remaining on this team. And God, if there's one that is screaming at you to sell, it's Cam Newton to Jarrah down in Dallas, because he's so dumb he would pay through the nose to have a season again in that moribund division. You could get something for Cam Newton. I want to see Bill draft and develop and build this team back up to greatness.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah, I mean, if for the long term, I'd much rather than be able to draft a quarterback in the first round next year, maybe have a veteran that can bring you along for the first half of the season, kind of like what Miami just did here with Ryan Fitzpatrick transferring to Tua.
Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, so Look, that's probably the better term plan, like the better long-term plan, because I think you're more apt to find the next guy. They had the guy, Mike, in the first round. I mean, you hope to find the next Patrick Mahomes or something like that. So, yeah, no, I'm with Mike on that. But I don't know, just I've never heard this level of excuse-making from this guy in Bill Belichick, who in the past has always said, well, we don't make excuses. And, you know, cap space can be maneuvered in various different ways, paraphrasing there. But, you know, like there's typically not this kind of behavior from this guy, and it just feels like the world is continuing to be upside down in 2020, and now you have Bill Belichick, man, like, well, you know, nothing I can do. My hands are tied here. It's cap space. That's why we are the way that we are. And it's like, no, dude, you're the way that they are because of bad drafts over the last 5 years and bad personnel decisions. Look in the mirror. It's on you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Mike buried the lead a little bit in his this delicious McRib metaphor, which I'm, like, completely lost focus at this point. But he said Bill's saying he can't do it, but there's something missing there. Bill's saying and admitting he can't do it without Tom.
Right.
Which means it was really Tom that was doing it. That's not to detract from what Bill's accomplished, but I'm just saying I think a lot of the you can do more with less is a lot easier when you have a franchise quarterback who basically is human spackle covering up these holes. So I think Mike kind of buried the lead. You're right. It is a tacit admission from Bill that he can't do it with these spare parts. But the reason he can't do it with these spare parts is because he doesn't have the most important part, which isn't him. It was Tom Brady.
Have some updated news on Julian Edelman. We will get to that coming up here next on Gasper Murray. And I want to just quickly go through some more things here before we wrap up for the day.
Okay. Can I make one quick request?
Yeah.
You did that. They had the guy. How would that be in Germany? What would they say?
Oh, they had the guy, Mike. They had the guy, Franz. It's something like that, yes. I love Dancing for Christmas.
Oh, it's so good.
So we have an update on what's going on with Julian Edelman, who's not going to play tomorrow. I want to get your quick thoughts on this game tomorrow, how it plays out, because they're going to be dealing with weather there. Mookie Betts and the Dodgers win the World Series this past week. So we'll get to all that coming up here, and as we got a couple of seconds to go on Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Is it appropriate to do a little bit of a retrospective on Julian Edelman? Because if he does not come back and he has 1 year left on his contract, the Patriots say, you know what? Or Julian says, you know what? My body after 12 years, I think, has had enough. It's a hell of a player. And he's been a hell of a player because when you look at the separated shoulder, two times separated last year, and the cracked ribs that he played with and still had a 1,000-yard, 100-catch season, it's been remarkable.
NBC Sports Boston's Tommy Curran, who's close to Julian Edelman, talking about Julian Edelman, and it sounds like, well, he's hinting at maybe this could be it for Edelman in the Patriots uniform. I mentioned in the prior segment we had an update on his status. We all knew he wasn't going to play tomorrow. He had a procedure done on his knee on Thursday. Now from Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, tweeted just minutes ago, the Patriots are expected to place veteran wide receiver Julian Edelman on injured reserve today. According to a source, he's going to be out at least 3 games following the knee surgery. But head coach Bill Belichick said this week he believes he will be back this season. And you alluded to that earlier on the show today as well, yeah. Chris. You think maybe, what, the Ravens game?
Well, now he has to miss that because he's on IR. So I wonder how much of this is the knee. I know he was reassessed on Friday. How much of this is the knee and how much of this is they feel like they can't wait? You know, they need the roster spot. So if you already know he's going to miss 2 games, which was definite, and he was maybe, you know, it was realistic that he could potentially return for the third, the Ravens game, you're better off just putting him on IR, and now you have the roster spot. You don't have just a dead roster spot sitting there.
Given the way that he's looked the last couple of weeks, were they really going to miss him tomorrow anyway? How do you feel about this game? There's reports that the weather is going to be like 40 to 50 mile an hour winds in Buffalo, rainy, so it's going to be a mess. Do you give the Patriots a chance? Will they miss Edelman? How do you think this plays out?
I do give the Patriots a chance. I mean, I think the weather is an equalizer in their favor because Buffalo's the team with the weapons. They're getting John Brown back. They obviously have Stephon Diggs, who leads the AFC in receiving yards. So when you look at that, and also Buffalo has not done a good job running the football this year. They've actually struggled to run the football offensively. I think they're 29th in the league in rushing offense. So that would lean towards the Patriots, who are the better running team. And Buffalo's also had some issues stopping the run. I just feel like, though, this is Buffalo's time in terms of if you're not going to beat the Patriots now, when they are extremely depleted, when they're in a position where they're vulnerable, and the head coach is basically admitting that he doesn't feel like he has the tools. If not now, when for Buffalo? They've beaten the Bills 7 straight times. The last time they lost to him, Jacoby Brissett was the quarterback. It was here at Gillette. If the Bills can't rise up and beat their AFC East overlords, their AFC East tormentors now, then I don't know. Then the whole division is fraudulent. You know, the Bills, to me, are the only team in the division that's semi-legitimate. If they lose this game, the whole division is completely fraudulent.
You're not buying Miami. Why?
I'm just not. Well, I think they're going to go to Tua, and I like Tua. I liked him coming out, but I feel like he's a rookie quarterback. And Fitzpatrick, you know you're going to get a certain level of play. Obviously, there's a ceiling on that. But I feel like if they really thought they were a playoff team, they wouldn't be making this switch.
Yeah, this Buffalo game tomorrow, I can't fully commit to the Bills.
Me neither.
I just can't, Chris. And, you know, talk about that weather, how it's going to be 40, 50 degree winds. That would mean, you know, the best way to attack this Patriots team right now, the way they're playing, I would think, is not just to run at the edge, but also, you know, use a precision passing game if you have it. You don't have that with Josh Allen, who looked good the first month. He's come back down to earth these last few games for Buffalo, last two or three. So with that kind of weather, you trust that guy to pass? Like, I don't. Like, yeah. And given the Bills' history, that they haven't won this division in 25 years, and just how they can't get the hell out of their own way, like, as bad as the Patriots have looked, and as much as I've overlooked the opponents these last couple of weeks, especially even last week against the Niners, I thought that they would clean up against Jimmy Garoppolo because, you know, you and I are anti-Garoppolo.
He wasn't great in that game.
And even Miami on the road in San Francisco made him look like what he really is, and he wasn't. They didn't need him all that much last week.
Off-brand Jared Goff.
Yeah, but I've underestimated the opponent the last couple of weeks. I feel like I'm probably doing that again with Buffalo, but I can't trust Buffalo in this spot with that kind of pressure. Like, if you beat the Patriots, finally the division's going to be yours. Like, they're the Bills. They're idiots, you know? Like, I could still see New England going in there tomorrow and winning this game, even if it's like 9-6.
Well, part of it too is that, you know, as much as we've talked about Belichick and what he's saying, I do believe in the legend of Belichick when it comes to this, being able to confuse and confound quarterbacks. And the numbers Josh Allen has against the Patriots are abysmal. He's 0-3 against them. He's completing 48.4% of his passes. His quarterback rating is 56.4, which is the lowest he has against any team he's played more than once. Belichick has gotten the best of him. Last year when they played up in Orchard Park, he threw 3 picks. The game that Buffalo lost here at Gillette, there were some laughable overthrows. He had 2 touchdowns where he like just airmailed it. I mean, it looked like the ball came out of a t-shirt cannon when he threw it. I'll believe it when I see it with Josh Allen, and he's fallen off the last 3 weeks, and he has bad numbers against Belichick, and the weather's going to be bad, so I feel like he's already a guy that will put the ball on the ground. I just feel like turnovers could be a factor in this one, and the Patriots could maybe gut it out 15-12 or something like that.
If they don't, is it over?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. And all I would ask going forward, NFL schedule makers, flexers, if you will, get that Baltimore night game the hell out of the night for the kid here, please, because I don't like doing the post game that late.
There's not a lot of options, Jim. I looked at it.
No, I know. I have two.
Actually, we need Jimmy G to bail us out. It would have to be 49ers Saints or Seahawks Rams. Those, to me, are the only legitimate choices.
Yeah, put one of those two in, Ravens game out of the night slot so I can have a more respectable time to do the post game with my partner Joe Murray.
So we either need Jared Goff or other Jared Goff to be in prime.
Imagine that. As much as we've bashed those two here, and rightfully so, over the last couple of seasons, we need them. We have to pull for Goff.
We need the Goffs.
Or
we
Italian
need
Goff.
One of the Goffs, yeah, or Italian Goff. We need Goff or Italian Goff to be playing in primetime.
You have some thoughts on how Game 6 of the World Series played out and how that was another night where the nerds had to eat a big steaming pile of crap?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not so much about the nerds eating a steaming pile of crap, as you put it. It's just the idea that I feel like it's ironic in that for so many years, people said baseball needs to change. When it was the traditionalists who were in charge of the game, they were so resistant, and there was this sort of tyranny of the establishment of this is the way we do things. And now that the nerds are the establishment, you're seeing the same thing. where there's this tyranny of the numbers, tyranny of the establishment. You can't do it any other way, or you get questioned or second guessed. And I look at that World Series and what Kevin Cash did, it just a more efficient product from a gameplay standpoint, which is absolutely what sabermetrics and analytics have brought to baseball, is not necessarily a more entertaining product. In fact, I know for a fact it's not a more entertaining product, because you look at the ratings, and this World Series was 32% below in the ratings, the worst World Series ratings ever.
All sports.
Just not compelling, but by 32%?
Yeah. I mean, I look, there's myriad reasons why sports are down, and you know, you have certain people that want to make the case of like, well, it's too political and rah. I you know, one of the ones that I think that's underrated, Chris, that I think has affected people, it just looks too weird. Without fans, I do think that you have.
But there were fans there.
No, but still, it's not real. To a lot of people, it just ultimately, it doesn't feel like it's real. It felt like it was forced. All the sports, whether it's MLB, NBA, NFL, what have you, I think numbers are down collectively. Because you have a certain segment of the population that are your borderline sports fans that normally are there, but they tune in, they're like, nope, it's too different, I'm not doing it. That's what I really think maybe some of the biggest numbers are.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right, but I just think my overall message for MLB is a more efficient game is not necessarily a more entertaining game, and they have to understand that from the analytics standpoint. And also, I feel like it's become this false choice, this false binary of, well, if you're criticizing this way of playing, then you want to live in the dark ages and you don't want anything to do with analytics or information. You know, analytics, that's an analyzing the situation based on the information you have. And that's not just based on statistical information. There's other information you can take in there. And what bothers me is I thought Kevin Cash's decision was just completely pro forma based on the way the Rays do it. And no matter what, like, Blake Snell was coming out of that game. And if you look at the World Series, I'm not even sure it would have gone to six games if Dave Roberts hadn't done the same thing in game four with Julio Urias. He was rolling along. He'd given up two solo home runs. He was at 80 pitches. He'd pitched like 4 2/3, and he yanked him. They end up losing that game 8-7, and he was by far the most effective pitcher they had all night. I feel like we've lost a little bit of the common sense factor. Like, starters, I get the third time through thing, Jim, but why are starters starters? It's because they have the most talent and the best stuff outside of maybe one or two high leverage relievers. But what's happened instead is they say, oh my God, this guy can't, you know, I don't care who it is, whether it's Blake Snell, Cy Young Award winner, or it's Julio Urias, this, you know, young guy with electric stuff. Well, third time through, we have to go to some nameless, faceless reliever who has a different arm slot so we can, like, fool them. And it's like we've forgotten the most basic thing, which is that the starters are the starters because they're the most talented pitchers and they have the best stuff and they have the most ability to get guys out on a consistent basis. That's how they became starters.
I mean, Snell was dealing on the level of Jack Morris game 7 against the Atlanta Braves 1991. I mean, look, I understand a lot of our audience isn't old enough to remember that, but it was, trust me. Like,
yeah,
even
he was
dealing. Look up at the numbers. It was that kind of game where, I mean, what do you have, 9 strikeouts? Through the
yeah,
first,
9 strikeouts.
Through the first 4 innings or whatever the hell it was. Like, it was like, the only person that had done that before was Sandy Koufax. Like, it was that kind of performance from Blake Snell, and you lift him because it was third time through. Like, you deserve that kind of an outcome. And on the one end, part of me appreciated it because it's like the nerds had to eat a big steaming pile of crap. But on the other, it's like, this is why this game has lost me.
Yes.
You idiots.
And the whole idea, and the most compelling thing about that game would have been, could Blake Snell, a guy who really didn't even want to be a part of this season to begin with and was sort of the poster child for selfish players during a pandemic, can he put this team on his back and force a game 7? And we lost that drama. You know, sports, we all love sports. The reason that people watch sports is because it is the ultimate reality television. It's the ultimate unscripted entertainment. And now everything, it feels like in baseball, is scripted. Oh, you're at 4 innings. Oh, it's the third time through. We're yanking you. It doesn't matter who you are. And if you know that's going to happen, that's just not as compelling. And can you imagine baseball without Sandy Koufax or without Bob Gibson? Can you imagine some of these guys going back in time and being like, oh, you know, I don't know, Sandy Koufax, third time through.
Right.
Or Bob Gibson, third time through. I mean, that's just ridiculous. The game would look completely different, and it's just become a parade of nameless, faceless relievers with different arm slots. I don't care. It's hard to get invested in it.
Were you ultimately happy for Mookie, though?
Yeah, I was rooting for Mookie. I was. I wanted to see, and Mookie did his thing, and you know, he hit that home run, which was pretty cool. That was kind of a goosebumps moment for me when he hit the home run that gave him the edge. And when you think about the most exciting plays from that series, I think a lot of them involve Mookie. Mookie making catches, Mookie on the bases, Mookie hitting home runs. He is what baseball should be trumpeting. He is what baseball should be selling. Not this idea of that Padres Cardinals game where the Padres win a must-win game, a clinching game, and they have a nine-inning shutout and they use nine different pitchers. Would you rather watch that or Mookie Betts rob a home run, hit a home run, or be on the bases? You tell me what baseball should be pushing.
I'll tell you, the guy looked like he was a different guy there. He looked like he was enjoying himself more. He looked more involved. He seemed like, you know, he just seemed like a bit of a wallflower here. And I don't think
he was
that
guarded.
He wanted to be here.
I think he was definitely guarded here. I think there was some fear of showing his true personality, of speaking out on things. He's been very outspoken on the racial reckoning in a way that he never was here. He voiced that MLB Jackie Robinson commercial, which really had nothing to do with baseball and everything to do with social justice and racial justice and some comments that Jackie Robinson had in his autobiography about, you know, never having it made in a black man in America. So I feel like his responses on and off the field here have been different in Los Angeles than they were when he was a member of the Red Sox.
Did you want Justin Turner jailed, though, at the end of the game for coming back out on the field?
You know, I found out about that after the fact. I thought it was pretty selfish. I don't agree with it, but I have a hard time getting as upset as some other people. I can see it from both sides. I don't think he should have done it. It was very selfish. On the other hand, it's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing to celebrate a World Series. And the reality of it is, again, I'm not making excuses for him, but if you watched any of this postseason or even any of this baseball season, guys didn't really follow the regular. Everybody had their masks down. After guys hit a home run, they're hugging, they're high-fiving, they're touching all over the place, which they weren't supposed to be doing. It happened all year long. So I think he was selfish. I think it was ill-advised. But in the grand scheme of things, was it all that different than what's been happening throughout the course of the season for MLB players and celebrations? No.
Yeah, I mean, he was 100% wrong. But, you know, and I'm glad that you're even keeled about it. Like, the guy worked his entire life for that moment. He finds out in the eighth inning, 30 minutes from that moment, that he tested positive. I mean, I'm not going to sit here on my perch as, like, sports radio guy and say I wouldn't have tried to celebrate in that spot, too. I probably would have. And I understand that some of his teammates, Kelly Jansen, his manager, Dave Roberts, like, have serious health issues.
They do.
But all those guys afterwards were like, well, he's one of us. He wanted to celebrate, like, you know, we understand the risks, but like, we're cool with it. And as long as those guys were cool with it, like, let's not get crazy. Everyone's lost their minds. We understand. And it's getting increasingly worse by the day. Boy, am I terrified about what this week's going to bring.
Mass shaming season is upon us.
Oh, but yeah, like, I don't know, the Justin Turner thing, like, everybody calm down. Yes, he was 100% wrong. I am with you on that. But like, suspend him for next year for a while. Like, you people are crazy. With that, let's wrap with five questions for Chris Gasper. We got nothing to do with sports.
Chris Gasper of Channel 5. I got five questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got five questions.
Five. One, two, three, four, five.
I got five questions. I hope this segment ain't too wild.
All right, Chris, we lost another great one in this hell year. There's news this morning that Sean Connery passed away at age 90. Was Sean Connery the best James Bond, in your opinion?
Yes, he was. He was the best James Bond. Here are my James Bond rankings. Okay. Sean Connery, number one. Number two, Roger Moore. Number three, Pierce Brosnan. Number four, Daniel Craig. Number five, George Lazenby. And number six, the worst of the Bonds, Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton, which, what era was that? Was that the
License
mid-80s?
License to Kill.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Terrible, terrible. Just, he's worse than Lazenby in Her Majesty's Secret Service.
That, yeah, James Bond was the best Bond, just in terms of the cool factor, aesthetically, like, that guy just, like, he had it all. Like, when I think he is synonymous with the James Bond name and the whole franchise, and boy, was he a swordsman. Question number two, Kanye West this week gifted his wife Kim Kardashian with a hologram of her late father. She seemed to appreciate it. Would you, Chris Gasper, appreciate that kind of gift if your wife were to gift you the hologram of a dead family member?
I don't know. That sounds kind of weird. Like, does it talk?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, no. And if you look it up on Twitter or social media all over the place, like Kim Kardashian, like there's video of it. It looks like Robert Kardashian, if you remember him
from
at the OJ trial and everything.
Is this something, didn't you mention
sounded
this?
Like him.
Didn't you mention that they're starting to do this at concerts or something?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You
no,
told
they,
me about
yeah,
this.
I think they had Tupac, a hologram of Tupac at Coachella like a couple of years ago or something like that. But would you? I find it too creepy. I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't want somebody like, here's your mom 20 years later. It would probably just like break my soul.
If I could, I mean, I don't want to, you know, pick, but if I could see my Nana again, I'd be like, that's kind of cool.
It's just too weird.
Really?
Holograms, like, and again, it goes back to the robots. I hate the robots.
Can I just say as a quick aside that I said this the other day? I was talking to my wife. All the things that I miss, like, you know, you have regrets, like things you're like, oh, I'm never going to be able to do this. I should have done this before the pandemic. You're going to laugh at me because I am, you know, foo-foo and shishi and bougie. I really regret that I never went to Coachella. That's like in my top five regrets.
Yeah, I could see that. That's very L.A. And, yeah. You know, same. I wish I went to one of those. I would never go now. Like, my festival days are long over. I think I've mentioned this before. The only way you would see yours truly at a festival is if I have the most VIP, where I don't have to be around the people. I have access to a private bathroom. Everything's free. I got to do this once. The last festival I went to, Chris, it broke me. It broke my brain. I had this kind of access at Lollapalooza in Chicago in 2014 or so.
Oh, nice.
Oh, it's the best. Like, oh, no, here's more everything. And you get to go in the backstage. You're like, oh, my God, like, I'm standing around the guys that were in Audioslave and Rage Against the Machine. They were, like, cool dudes. The drinks, how much do I have to pay for this? All free. No lines at the bathroom. Oh, and after that, I was like, I'm never going to a festival again.
It's like when you and I talked about when you fly first class to, Los Angeles.
Yeah, you fly mint. It breaks you.
It's over. It's like you can't fly, like, regular again.
Question number three, do you have any major phobias, snakes, heights,
yes,
walking over grates in parking lots, things of that nature?
I am afraid of fire, afraid of heights, afraid of water.
Fire thing, I'm with you on.
I have lots of phobias.
So, like, burn to death?
Yeah, it's the worst of all the deaths.
Well, you don't die until it cooks your insides, so you're there and you're feeling it for a while until you numb out. That's not great.
Yeah.
Which movie, Halloween-related or not, do you think is the scariest movie of all time, Chris?
Ooh, Halloween-related or not? Probably The Exorcist? That freaks me out, man.
Still holds up. Still very scary.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I will go with 2002's 28 Days Later. Do you ever see this? This was
I haven't.
Maybe I feel like one of the first of the new era of zombie movies.
Yeah.
I think it's got Cillian Murphy is the kid's name. It was kind of an indie movie at the time. But boy, still terrifying. The way that it's filmed. It's a pandemic. It's very fitting if you really want to scare the bejesus out of yourself now. If you've never seen 28 Days Later, now 18 years old, still holds up, still terrifying.
Yeah.
That's the one that still scares
the bejesus out of me. So if we're doing it along those lines, what's the one that, what's her name? Marion Cotillard was in. And Gwyneth Paltrow's in it, and she cheats on her husband, and she starts the pandemic.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, I can't remember the name if I've seen it, but it's like, you watch it and it's literally like somebody touched the spoon. Now you touch the spoon. Now you're dead. Like everybody dies. It's that's scary considering what we're going through. I can't remember the name of it. Oh.
Well, finally, as we wrap up here, fill in the blank, Chris. When trick or treating, I used to hate when neighbors put blank in my bag.
Granola bars, non-candy pretty much. All non-candy.
Yeah, anything that's the non-candy. And for me, it was always raisins. Raisins are useless. I saw what you did. I saw the little red box with the girl on it. It was, I forget the brand. But as soon as you shut your door, it's coming out of the bag. It's getting thrown at your house.
Oh, that's terrible.
Well, I did. And no one wants the raisins. And so concludes five questions for Chris Gasper.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Now, what was your Contagion?
Contagion's the movie.
Somebody, thank you, Christopher Rosso on Twitter. Contagion, that's the movie. But I just want to ask you, what was your policy? What was your honor policy on, hey, this family just left a bowl of candy out. Please take one. Because I was pretty good. I always would take one or two at the most, but I feel like you were a dump the bowl in my bag guy.
Chris, I mean, you already know the answer to this. What do you think?
I think you dumped the bowl in your bag.
I mean, you're dealing with a scumbag here. You're not coming like, you're leaving the bowl out? Mine. Dump.
Little fat Jimmy's like, yeah. I get everything. The USS flag, any toy I want. These are all mine. Boom.
And one more correction before we wrap here and make way for Rian Johnson, who's coming up next. I knew I was right.
Okay.
Return of the King did win Best Picture at the Oscars. I was off by a year. The second one, interminable effing movies, those Lord of the Rings movies, that was also up for Best Picture. It was the last one with the 13 endings that did win Best Picture in 2004.
I forgot about that.
It was up against Master and Commander, sucks. Seabiscuit, overrated.
Seabiscuit was good.
Mystic River, still great, still holds up.
Slightly and overrated.
Lost in Translation, which was the Best Picture.
Yes, that's a great movie.
In 2004.
I agree.
That movie's great. Scarlett Johansson, looking like a snack. Bill Murray is like depressed middle-aged guy. I feel you. Movie still holds up. I recently saw it just a few weeks ago. It's still awesome. Lost in Translation. That's the Best Picture. Not Return of the King. Return of the King. F off. Everyone have a safe and happy Halloween. Talk to you Monday with Felger and Maz, or in the postgame tomorrow night. You'll be in the pregame with Beatles starting at 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Yep, 10 a.m. tomorrow, right here.
Chris, always a pleasure. B-Rob, thanks for producing the show. Brian, Rob, Ryan Johnson up next. Enjoy your Saturday, your weekend. Happy Halloween, everybody. Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.